Chapter 11. Cheerful and quiet, like well-behaved children. Each of them but saved his Chris, but lingered had to make a distribution of cotton cloth out of his trade goods. Whenever he passed by them, they all looked after him gravely. Hassam and Amada lived in the cuddy. The chief's sister took the air only in the evening, and those two could be heard every night, invisible and murmuring in the shadows of the quarter deck. Every Malay on board kept respectfully away from them. Lingard, on the poop, listened to the soft voices, rising and falling, in a melancholy cadence. Sometimes the woman cried out, as if in anger or in pain. He would stop short. The sound of a deep sigh would float up to him on the stillness of the night. Attentive stars surrounded the wandering brig, and on all sides their light fell through a vast silence upon a noiseless sea. Lingard would begin again to pace the deck, muttering to himself. Bellerup's the man for this job. His is the only place where I can look for help, but I don't think I know enough to find it. I wish I had old Jorgensen here just for 10 minutes. This Jorgensen knew things that had happened a long time ago, and lived amongst men efficient in meeting the accidents of the day, but who did not care what would happen tomorrow, and who had no time to remember yesterday. Strictly speaking, he did not live amongst them. He only appeared there from time to time. He lived in the native quarter, with a native woman, in a native house standing in the middle of a plot of fenced ground where grew plantains, and furnished only with mats, cooking pots, a queer fishing net on two sticks, and a small mahogany case with a lock, and a silver plate engraved with the words, Apton H.C. Jorgensen. Bark Wild Rose. It was like an inscription on a tomb. The Wild Rose was dead, and so was Captain H.C. Jorgensen, and the sextant case was all that was left of them. Old Jorgensen, gaunt and mute, would turn up at meal times on board any trading vessel in the roads, and the steward's Chinamen or mulattoes would sulkily put on an extra plate without waiting for orders. When the seamen traders foregathered noisily round a glittering cluster of bottles and glasses on a lighted veranda, old Jorgensen would emerge up the stairs, as if from a dark sea, and, stepping up with a kind of tottering jauntiness, would help himself in the first tumbler to hand. I drink to you all. No chair. He would stand silent over the talking group. His taciturnity was as eloquent as the repeated warning of the slave of the feast. His flesh had gone the way of all flesh, his spirit had sunk in the turmoil of his past, but his immense and bony frame survived, as if made of iron. His hands trembled, but his eyes were steady. He was supposed to know details about the end of mysterious men, and of mysterious enterprises. He was an evident failure himself, but he was believed to know secrets that would make the fortune of any man. Yet there was also a general impression that his knowledge was not of that nature which would make it profitable for a moderately prudent person. This powerful skeleton, dressed in faded blue serge, and without any kind of linen, existed anyhow. Sometimes, if offered the job, he piloted a home ship through the Straits of Rio, after, however, assuring the captain, "You don't want a pilot. A man could go through with his eyes shut. But if you want me, I'll come. $10. Then, after seeing his charge clear of the last island of the group, he would go back 30 miles in a canoe, with two old Malays who seemed to be in some way his followers. To travel 30 miles at sea under the equatorial sun, and in a cranky dugout where once down you must not move, is an achievement that requires the endurance of a fakir and the virtue of a salamander. $10 was cheap, and generally he was in demand. When times were hard he would borrow $5 from any of the adventurers with the remark, "I can't pay you back very soon, but the girl must eat, and if you want to know anything, I can tell you." It was remarkable that nobody ever smiled at that nothing. The usual thing was to say, "Thank you, old man. When I am pushed for a bit of information I'll come to you." Jorgensen nodded then, and would say, colon, remember that, unless you young chaps are like we men who ranged about here years ago, what I could tell you would be worse than poison. It was from Jorgensen, who had his favorites with whom he was less silent, that lingered had heard of Dar es Salaam, the whore of refuge. Jorgensen had, as he expressed it, known the inside of that country just after the high old times, when the white-clad padres preached, and fought all over Sumatra till the Dutch shook in their shoes. Only he did not say hook and hose, but the above paraphrase conveys well enough his contemptuous meaning. Lingard tried now to remember and piece together the practical bits of old Jorgensen's amazing tales, but all that had remained with him was an approximate idea of the locality and a very strong, but confused notion of the dangerous nature of its approaches. He hesitated, and the brig, answering in her movements to the state of the man's mind, lingered on the road, seemed to hesitate also, swinging this way and that on the days of calm. It was just because of that hesitation that a big New York ship, loaded with oil in cases for Japan, and passing through the Billiton Passage, sighted one morning a very smart brig being hove to right in the fairway, and a little to the east of Karamata. The lank skipper, in a frock coat, and the big mate with heavy mustaches, judged her almost too pretty for a Britisher, and wondered at the man on board laying his topsail to the mast for no reason that they could see. The big ship's sails fanned her along, flapping in the light air, and when the brig was last seen far astern as he had still her main yard aback, as if waiting for someone. But when, next day, a London tea clipper passed on the same track, she saw no pretty brig hesitating, all white and still at the parting of the ways. All that night lingered and talked with Hassam, while the stars streamed from east to west like an immense river of sparks above their heads. Imada listened, sometimes exclaiming low, sometimes holding her breath. She clapped her hands once. A faint dawn appeared. You shall be treated like my father in the country, Hassam was saying. A heavy dew dripped off the rigging, and the darkened sails were black on the pale azure of the sky. Why, you shall be the father who advises for good, I shall be a steady friend, and as a friend I want to be treated no more, said Lingard. Take back your ring. Why do you scorn my gift? Asked Hassam, with a sad and ironic smile. Take it, said Lingard. It is still mine. How can I forget that, when facing death, you thought of my safety? There are many dangers before us. We shall be often separated to work better for the same end. If ever you and Imada need help at once, and I am within reach, send me a message with this ring, and if I am alive I will not fail you. He looked around at the pale daybreak. I shall talk to Bellerup straight like we whites do. I have never seen him, but I am a strong man. Bellerup must help us to reconquer your country, and when our end is attained I won't let him eat you up. Hassam took the ring, and inclined his head. It's time for us to be moving, said Lingard. He felt a slight tug at his sleeve. He looked back, and caught Imada in the act of pressing her forehead to the gray flannel. Don't, child, he said, softly. The sun rose above the faint blue line of the shore of refuge. The hesitation was over. The man and the vessel, working in accord, had found their way to the faint blue shore. Before the sun had descended halfway to its rest, the brig was anchored within a gunshot of the slimy mangroves, in a place where for 100 years or more no white man's vessel had been entrusted to the hold of the bottom. The adventurers of 2 centuries ago had no doubt known of that anchorage, for they were very ignorant and incomparably audacious. If it is true, as some say, that the spirits of the dead haunt the places where the living have sinned and toiled, then they might have seen a white longboat, pulled by 8 oars and steered by a man sunburned and bearded, a cabbage leaf hat on head, and pistols in his belt, skirting the black mud, full of twisted roots, in search of a likely opening. Creek after creek was passed, and the boat crept on slowly like a monstrous water spider with a big body and 8 slender legs. Did you follow with your ghostly eyes the quest of this obscure adventurer of yesterday? You shades of forgotten adventurers who, in leather jerkins and sweating under steel helmets, attacked with long rapiers the palisades of the strange heathen, or, musket on shoulder and match in cock, guarded timber blockhouses built upon the banks of rivers that command good trade. You, who, wearied with the toil of fighting, slept wrapped and free as mantles on the sand of quiet beaches, dreaming of fabulous diamonds, and of a far-off home. Here's an opening, said Lingard to Hassam, who sat at his side, just as the sun was setting away to his left. Here's an opening big enough for a ship. It's the entrance we are looking for, I believe. We shall pull all night up this creek, if necessary, and it's the very devil, if we don't come upon Bellarup's lair before daylight. He shoved the tiller hard over and the boat, swerving sharply, vanished from the coast. And perhaps the ghosts of old adventurers nodded wisely their ghostly heads, and exchanged the ghost of a wistful smile. What's the matter with King Tom of late? Would ask someone when, all the cards in a heap on the table, the traders lying back in their chairs took a spell from a hard gamble. Tom has learned to hold his tongue, he must be up to some damn good thing, opined another, while a man with hooked features, and of German extraction who was supposed to be agent for a Dutch crockery house the famous Sphinx Mark broke in resentfully. Never mind him, gentlemen's. He's mad, mad as a marsh hase. 3 minutes ago I call on board his brig to talk business. And he says like this clear out. Clear out before I shuck you overboard. God for damn. Is that the way to talk business? I van't sell the main little case first shop crockery for trade and, I don't blame Tom, interrupted the owner of a pearling schooner, who had come into the roads for stores. Mosey, there isn't a mangy cannibal left in the whole of New Guinea that hasn't got a cup and saucer of your providing. You flooded the market, say V? Jorgensen stood by, a skeleton at the gaming table. Because you are a Dutch spy, he said, suddenly, in an awful tone. The agent of the Sphinx Mark jumped up in a sudden fury. Gentlemen's, you all know me. Not a muscle moved in the faces around. Know me, he stammered with wet lips. Fun fear perfectly acquaint crockery verflicht sponsor. Spy. For spy? Vordum English peddlers. The door slammed. Is that so? Asked a New England voice. Why don't you let daylight into him? We can't do that here, murmured one of the players. Why your deal, Trench, let us get on. Can't you? Drawled the New England voice. You law-abiding, get a summons, act of parliament, lot of sons of Belial, can't you? Now, look a here, these Colt pistols I am selling, he took the perler aside, and could be heard talking earnestly in the corner. See you load and see? There were rapid clicks. Simple, isn't it? And if any trouble say with your divers click, 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 row and through like a sieve warranted to cure the worst kind of cussedness in any nigger. Yes, siree. A case of 24 single specimens as you like. No? Shotguns rifles? No. Well, I guess you're of no use to me, but I could do a deal with that Tom what do you call him? Where do you catch him? Everywhere, eh? Well, that's nowhere. But I shall find him someday, yes, siree. Jorgensen, utterly disregarded, looked down dreamily at the falling cards. Spy, I tell you, he muttered to himself. If you want to know anything, ask me. When Lingard returned from Wajo after an uncommonly long absence, everyone remarked a great change. He was less talkative, and not so noisy, he was still hospitable, but his hospitality was less expansive, and the man who was never so happy as when discussing impossibly wild projects with half a dozen congenial spirits often showed a disinclination to meet his best friends. In a word, he returned much less of a good fellow than he went away. His visits to the settlements were not less frequent, but much shorter, and when there he was always in a hurry to be gone. During 2 years the brig had, in her way, as hard a life of it as the man. Swift and trim she flitted amongst the islands of little-known groups. She could be descried afar from lonely headlands, a white speck traveling fast over the blue sea, the apathetic keepers of rare lighthouses dotting the great highway to the east, came to know the cut of her topsails. They saw her passing east, passing west. They had faint glimpses of her flying with masts aslant in the midst of a rain squall, or could observe her at leisure, upright and with shivering sails, forging ahead through a long day of unsteady airs. Men saw her battling with a heavy monsoon in the Bay of Bengal, lying becalmed in the Java Sea, or gliding out suddenly from behind a point of land, graceful and silent in the clear moonlight. Her activity was the subject of excited, but low-toned conversations, which would be interrupted when her master appeared. "Here he is. Came in last night," whispered the gossiping group. Lingard did not see the covert glances of respect tempered by irony. He nodded and passed on. "Hey, Tom. No time for a drink?" would shout someone. He would shake his head without looking back, far away already. Florid and burly he could be seen, for a day or two, getting out of Moldy Gary's, striding in sunshine from the Occidental Bank to the harbor office, crossing the Esplanade, disappearing down the street of Chinese shops, while at his elbow, and as tall as himself, old Jorgensen paced along, lean and faded, obstinate and disregarded, like a haunting spirit from the past eager to step back into the life of men. Lingard ignored this wreck of an adventurer, sticking to him closer than his shadow, and the other did not try to attract. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.